You're listening to Knowing Faith, a podcast of Training the Church.
This is Kyle Worley, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jen Wilkin and JT English. What's up?
Hey,
what's
Kyle.
Up, Kyle?
Wow, thank you guys for both responding to that. Usually one of you just leaves me in the lurch there, but we entered in with a lot of energy for our first episode, and guess what? The three of us get to hang out a lot in person this year. I'm really excited about that. One of the places that we will be together is in Indiana in September for the Gospel Coalition Conference. We're going to be doing a couple of special events at the conference. We would love for you to all come and join us. Our friends over at TGC have created a discount code for you for $20 off registration that expires on February 16th. The code is Knowing Faith. You can register over at thegospelcoalition.org/TGC23 and use the code Knowing Faith to get $20 off registration. That'd be fun, right? I think it's gonna be so fun.
It's gonna be a blast.
It really is. I mean,
Jen Wilkins gonna have an autograph line where she'll sign your Bible and everything.
You are dumb.
That would be I gotta tell you, I grew up in evangelicalism. When you got your Bible signed, I know it's I know some people still sign Bibles, which is totally, to each their own on that front. But I remember, does anybody remember a Point of Grace?
Oh, yeah.
Was that like a band?
Singing group.
Yeah, okay.
It was like an all-female singing group.
Yeah.
I had Point of Grace sign my Bible sometime in like 1995.
Nice. Do you still have that Bible? Are you still using that one?
I still have it. I'm not still using it.
So. I am occasionally asked to sign Bibles, and I have said, I didn't write that one, is usually what I'll say. It's like, this is not actually my book. And it's really sweet. Like, I understand. I'm really not dogging on people who ask for that, but I just don't do it. It makes me feel weird. And I had a group of women come up to me at a conference, and they said, "We know that you don't sign Bibles, but will you sign this?" And they flip open to a devotional that I had contributed to a study Bible.
Unbelievable.
And I was like, no, it's a loophole.
That's great. Well, they got you. Well, we are 10 seasons in, and this 10th season is a little bit of a kind of a mixed bag in terms of what we're going to be up to. We're going to be doing some reflective episodes. We're going to be doing some episodes that kind of cover the core values and the scope of what Knowing Faith has been, is, and will be in the future. And we're also going to be covering the doctrine of salvation. But 10 seasons in, I get a little misty-eyed. That feels crazy to say. Like, 10 seasons in, we're clear 200 episodes this season. And it just feels strange, doesn't it?
I can think back to that first conversation, Kyle, where you brought this up. We're sitting in a Chick-fil-A booth in Flower Mound, Texas, and we were just having a conversation. I forget exactly what it was, but it was about theology and the Bible, and we're doing exactly this. Mm-hmm. Like, what we're doing right now is what we're doing in that Chick-fil-A booth, and I had my sauces all perfectly lined up, and we're eating, and you're like, we should do this as a podcast. And both Jen and I were like, no.
No.
Like, in some sense, that feels like yesterday. In another sense, it feels like a different lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to reflect and think about all that God's done in our lives personally and also in this podcast over those 10 seasons. It's really just wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is crazy to think about. What's your elevator pitch for Knowing Faith now, 10 seasons in? I mean, it's different than it was 10 seasons ago. But like, when somebody's at, like, if somebody's like, oh, yeah, so what do you do? And you're like, oh, well, I ride, or I teach, or I preach, or I pastor. I also do a podcast. How would you like elevator pitch Knowing Faith at this point? Not what we intended it to be, not what we thought it would be, not what our first draft was, but now, what would you tell somebody?
What was the elevator pitch? I don't remember where we started.
Well, the first elevator pitch, the first elevator pitch was a Jen Wilkins show.
Oh, you're so dumb. That is not what we would never.
No, I pitched
that's
it.
That's why you were like, no.
I pitched it to Kit Rabelais, and then I pitched it to you, and you said,
that's right. I do remember this now. Yeah.
I came into your office, and I said, hey, I just got done with Kent. We're thinking about creating some podcasts. And what do you think about a Bible-focused show for Jen Wilkin? And you said, Absolutely no. not. I'm yes. not remotely interested. Yeah. And I said, okay, well, let me Still go back true. To the drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then let me go back to the drawing board, came back with this idea. And I think that the original idea was knowing, like, I remember we sat in a conference room, we brainstormed names for the show.
Mm-hmm. I came up with the name.
You did come up with the name.
Yeah, I want the credit.
That's exactly right. Because we were like, man, how do we do this in a way that, like, just puts the meaningful conversations that we're having in a collaborative fashion out yeah. there for public consumption? And that was kind of what it was. I don't know that we really thought much beyond, like, let's just keep talking, but then put mics in front of our faces. Originally, it was just that. And then it kind of mutated into, like, what if we took the training program content and your Bible studies and just started, like, what's the cutting room floor of the stuff that we're preparing to teach? Now let's do that on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I remember you kind of wanted it to be like, what are the things we didn't have time to talk about? Yes. And, you know, it's kind of like, yep. let's pick up all the extra stuff. And then it ended up, we were all like, hey, I'm tired. Can we recycle some stuff from somewhere else? And that actually ended up, like, I probably wouldn't use that as my elevator pitch because it sounds lazy and pathetic. But it's really getting to, the way I would describe it is like getting to sort of revisit and savor things that you kind of have to run past in your daily responsibilities for teaching. And so it's like the podcast has turned into me, for me, has turned into an opportunity to sort of reflect further and enjoy things mm-hmm. that I had to talk about in a set period of time for a teaching or to sort of draw on things that I've been thinking about over and over again that maybe I don't have anywhere yet that I'm going to talk about them in book form or in written form. Yep. But here we get to work things out in real time. I don't know how our listeners feel about us working things out in real time, but it's actually helpful to me. Like I come off of recording a podcast sometimes and I'll think, oh, that's something I can really use. I'm going to use that this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'd say my elevator pitch now would be, it's just friends talking about theology.
Yep.
With microphones in front of their faces.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the consistent theme has been we've believed in an idea of this since the very beginning. Find trusted people that you love and that love you and talk about what you believe are the most important things, the things of God. Yeah. And it's not that we're producing highly produced and perfectly right. thought out content that we think everybody else should believe, but we're really just trying to do theology together as friends. And I would say that if you were to ask me, JT, what are some of the top five ways that you've learned over the last 5 years? Certainly it's been books that I've read and sermons that I've had to wrestle through and commentaries that I'm working with, but I would put this podcast still one of the highest learning opportunities for me because I'll see things in the text that you guys will help me see. And mm-hmm. I hope that the opposite is true because we're just still trying to do theology together and to show people that theology is very rarely a perfectly produced product. It's often a conversation where we're all just learning together. And that's how this started. And I would say that's still what we're doing.
Well, and that's a really marker that you just mentioned that's been really important to all three of us was we just aren't interested in highly produced content. I mean, it just doesn't feel like us. And so mm-hmm. thank you for listening along to our janky. I mean, you know, we've gotten a little better at like making things not be terrible, but we're just not interested in the super polished, curated. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I think there are some really well done podcasts out there that are scripted beautifully and are concise and that never wander off into weird hilarity. But that's just not us. It's not our personalities. Mm-hmm. And so we did want to, if we were going to commit to doing something, we wanted it to be something that was reflective of who we really are. Like that if you met us in person, you'd be like, oh, that's the same person that I heard on the podcast.
That's exactly right.
Like when we go to TGC, and let's say we're doing a live podcast there, and then let's say the three of us go to dinner together, the dinner is going to sound like the podcast sounds.
100%.
This is just what we do.
that's exactly right. And, you know, I think that one of the things that's been interesting is just how it's evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, over 10 seasons, it's quite a number of years there. And we've had some challenges and opportunities along the way. Like I remember when COVID hit, we still had episodes to record. And we did those original recordings for some of the post-COVID, that little window through Zoom. I mean, we were just like trying to figure it out. Like everyone
YouTube
Live we did. the podcast started with the three of us literally working within five steps of each other's doors. Yeah. Just like right there. So doors open.
So fun. I miss those days.
It really was. It was a sweet time. But just kind of interrupting each other with thoughts or ideas or books or questions or trying to teach this or feedback on that. And then we would just literally take that energy. We would print off the run sheets. We would go into the studio and we would all be there together. And now we're doing this from Colorado and Denton and Richardson. And we're just kind of scattered a little bit more than we were. We're not all serving at the same church any longer. We've had changes in our family life. We've had changes in our projects. We've studied things independently from one another.
We each have different jobs than we did when we started. Like our vocations have changed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, I was real scared about some of those transitions to know what was going to happen. Because we didn't know what was going to happen to the podcast. I mean, I think we still had an optimism around it. But some of those changes put the podcast, not in jeopardy in like a scary sense, but in a, are we going to be able to keep doing this? And I think one of those was me moving to Colorado and taking the job at Storyline. And that meant that—
Leaving Lever.
Yeah. Kyle left first.
I did. Yeah, but Richardson.
Yeah. But I mean, it just meant like— But also it meant that, you know, our previous church owned Knowing Faith. Yep. And it was kind of like, our, you know, now that two of us aren't there anymore, are they going to want to still produce it? Can we produce it? And there was conversations. And they were super generous with us and allowed us to keep doing this and allowed us to get the podcast from them. But there was a sense there of like, what is this going to be? Are we going to go do something else? Are we going to keep doing this? And I'm really grateful for the outcome that we got.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we were also just doing one podcast, you know, like it was just when we started with Knowing Faith, it was Knowing Faith. And now, you know, 10 seasons in, we're kind of now on this ship with some other partners, Family Discipleship, Confronting Christianity. We just launched a new podcast this season called Starting Place with Elizabeth Woodson, with plans to launch more. And so it's been crazy because I think initially it was like curious, like, do we think we could even do this? And now to feel like there's just kind of a network of these podcasts that have come together with all of these trusted voices, with people that we trust, that we work with, and that kind of share a similar vision, it's been really interesting. That's been one of the opportunities that I think over the last 10 seasons has changed. Is initially, I remember a conversation very clearly whenever we were sitting with you guys, and I said, how many people would need to engage with this on a monthly basis for you to make it feel like it's worth your time? And I don't know if you guys remember what you told me, but JT said, probably 5,000 people.
I remember saying that.
And that's
an enormous number of people.
Yeah.
And Jen immediately was like, yeah, I mean, gosh, 5,000 people, that'd be crazy.
That's like a mega giga church. That's insane. Yeah. For people listening to theology and Bible literacy, I mean, that's huge.
Well, I just didn't think we were that interesting either. So.
Well, I don't think we need to inflate ourselves. No. I don't know that
when I said 5,000, I was like, there's no way we're going to hit that mark. This is going to shoot him down. That's what I was intending to do.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's been wild because, I mean, and this is, I mean, you know this because you're a part of the audience, but Knowing Faith now reaches about 200,000 to 250,000 people in a given month. We are just nearly at 10 million total downloads.
Holy
over
moly.
The course of 10
I don't think I knew
seasons.
That.
Yeah.
So it is wild that the podcast has grown in this way. And I think it's important. Like maybe somebody's just jumping in. Like I met a guy recently at a coffee shop. He came up to me and was like, hey, he was like, I just jumped in with Knowing Faith and man, it's such a great resource. Thank you for doing it. And there's always new people jumping in. But even for people that have been a part of our audience, I think it's important for us to pan out and just go, why do we actually do this? Mm-hmm. Like we're all teaching, we're all writing, we all have families and friends and communities and hobbies and interests other than this. It's not like we just have an abundance of underutilized time. Why do we make time to do this? What are some of the key values that drive us to keep doing this?
Honestly, I'm going to go back to what I said. I'm going to say two things. The first thing I'll say is I'm still doing this selfishly. I'm doing this because I have the opportunity to speak with two of my best friends who I know love me and who I love, who I trust their voices, and I get to learn. Like, it still feels like we're in that Chick-fil-A booth a little bit, and I get to open up the Bible with my friends and learn. And I get to work out ideas for myself and see how they're going to respond to them. And we get to have disagreements. Like, rather than me having disagreements in my head, I get to hear, here's what Kyle would say about that. Here's what Jen would say about that. So there's still really a selfish motivation for me in this. I think the other motivation is I still really believe in this. Like to hear the stories of how people have grown and learned and some of the projects that have come out of this that we're not doing, other podcasts, like people have said, I'm starting a podcast on on thinking faith or whatever it might be, because we really, which is great. Like this is not proprietary. We believe that theology is best done in community with each other, working out the things of God so that we can love God in deeper ways. And so I would just say like my greatest motivation for this is we really believe that everybody is a theologian and we want this podcast just to help spark those things for other people and in their thought lives and in churches and in home groups and in Bible studies so that they might love God in deeper ways.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's kind of like, it's so different of a space to speak into than the other places that were in front of a microphone or on a platform because it's dialogic, right? And so like I can know if I'm going to trot out an idea that the whole room isn't just going to nod at me and go, oh, yeah, I'm going to think about that later. It's going to be JT going, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Or, you know, or oh, I think you might be a heretic, you know. And so there's, it's a conversation in a very real sense. And it's a conversation with an audience, right? Like we know that you guys are listening in. But also, and that's another piece of what we've wanted to do is just model something. And I don't mean like in a look how amazing we are. Please do what we're doing. Just like, hey, this actually happens, I think is the way that I would describe it. It's just like, hey, we're not creating a sort of a fake environment where there is the appearance of dialogue. We want you to know this is what it sounds like and that you can reach the end of a 30 or 40 minute conversation and still disagree with each other on something. That's right. And you can revisit it season after season. Like there are some things that I'm sure some of our listeners are like, hey, please don't ever talk about that again. You guys have fought about it long enough. Right. And we'll probably be, you know, going back and forth on it. I mean, Lord willing, for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Kyle and JT can continue past that. I will probably be unable to communicate at that age.
No, but no.
By then, they're going to have your brain on some kind of computer device, and you'll be able to participate for as long as you want.
Yeah, we'll be dealing with
auto-generated.
The artificial intelligence, Jim Wilkin, the consciousness. But you know, I think when we started it out, I remember we sat down and we were like, okay, the three or four things that we want to be doing were the same three or four things that we had kind of put our stake in the ground in for like all of our ministry endeavors for the foreseeable future. We talked about biblical literacy. We were like, okay, we need to pull the alarm on biblical literacy over and over and over again. And we had seen how hungry people were through their engagement with Bible studies in local churches or through the curriculum that Jen was writing and working on or her teaching ministry. And we just thought, man, we need to continue to figure out ways to make this available and accessible. Mm-hmm. Theological discipleship. What JT and I were seeing in what was then the training program, but what is now called the Forge program at Mosaic and the Institute program at Storyline, we were just seeing doctrine just really engage disciples in a meaningful way. And people that were telling us like, why didn't anyone tell me this sooner? And so we thought we got to make that more accessible. And we can't just like, we can't go to every church and do this. So it was like, what's a way that we can do that? And then the last thing was people would make comments. Like we'd have people kind of come into our orbit. And I don't know if you guys remember how foreign it was. Now I do feel like it's becoming more normative. I like to think that we've had a bit of a contribution in that. Mm-hmm. But I can remember people making comments about seeing us in the round together. And I don't mean like at an event. I mean like at a meal, in a meeting, at a staff retreat, and being like, okay, that's different. I remember some things being like, can you do that? Can this happen? And it felt like we had been operating in a world where the brother-sister fraternity, fellowship, collaboration, partnership had just become such a like third rail of like, don't touch it, don't even talk about it. And we fell into a groove where it just started to feel really normal. And as we've done this show, I feel like it's become something that other people have looked at and been like, wait, is that possible? And it's like, yes, with respect, honor, love, grace, and holiness, you can do this. Mm-hmm. It is possible.
Well, you guys have both been huge door holders in that regard. Like you've done it not just on the podcast, but in the environments where you're leading, inviting women in, because I think it kind of falls along two lines, right? It's like women are like, oh, that's not something that I get asked to do. You know, I'll just stay over here to the side. Or it's men thinking, you know, I don't know. The optics might be bad on that, right? And I think in both cases, you spoke to both sides of that conversation, and you were like, no, this is actually, it's not just desirable, it's necessary. And so I know how I felt being welcomed into that. And I've talked about this some, but like, I have four brothers. I expect to be in conversations with male peers. Like that was my expectation coming into adulthood, because that had been my reality growing up. And so I think it was easier for me to walk toward it than it might be for some other women. And then, you know, then it was like, oh my gosh, we really like each other and we have deep trust with each other. And so that's the piece too, that takes time, right? Yeah, to be able to build, it can take time. It doesn't necessarily take time, but it's not one conversation. It's not four conversations. It's building trust over time with each other so that you reach the point where you have the conversation where even some of the joking, like I'm sure that people hear the way that we joke with each other on the podcast sometimes, they're like, wow, that's, you know, that was a serious shot. And I've even had to walk some stuff back because like, you know, like honestly, when we're sitting around at dinner, there might be a joke that I would make that I wouldn't make on here because you guys would think I was being mean and Kyle would be like, no, she's just being funny. And so, you know, and so we have trust with each other that might not necessarily translate to the audience at large, but you should know that deep trust and affection is possible between men and women doing theology together in ways that are completely appropriate and beyond questioning, like the appropriateness of.
That's good.
After just 5 years on the market, the Christian Standard Bible is the fastest growing English language Bible translation. As the Bible is meant to be read, understood, and shared, the CSB is designed to be a translation for everyone. It communicates the truth of God's word for today's readers. It is highly accurate for serious study, and it is highly readable for the newest and youngest readers. The CSB is built for lifelong discipleship. You can learn more at csbible.com. That's csbible.com. Meet your new favorite study companion. Immerse yourself in both the Old and New Testaments with the Holman Handbooks, brought to you by the Christian Standard Bible. I've got to tell you, I love these handbooks. They contain charts, maps, word studies, and more for each book of the Bible. They are some of my most used resources whenever I'm studying a passage. They intersect beauty, goodness, and truth, and they're designed to last a lifetime as a valuable resource for Bible study, teaching, and ongoing discipleship. They're available in two different cover options for each. Buy one, get one free at lifeway.com with the promo code HandbookBogo. Again, that is HandbookBogo on lifeway.com in order to get some of these Holman handbooks, HandbookBogo, Handbook BOGO on lifeway.com for these Holman handbooks. They are fantastic resources.
Okay, what are some standout moments or highlights?
Oh, man.
What are some things that you look back on and you're like, wow? Like, you know, it's interesting because if you look at our history, we early on, we had a lot more guests. And if you asked me, like, early on, I would have been like, wow. Like, I remember two interviews that I felt like were just so good. The first time that we had Greg Allison on.
Yes.
And then when we had Ligon Duncan. Mm-hmm. We had a lot
those
of great
are
interviews.
The two that I thought of. Yes.
But the first time that we had Greg Allison on, Greg Allison and Ligon Duncan both were able to do something that is so rare, which is they are like super heavyweight minds who are also like very kind and incredibly diplomatic. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in both of those rooms where I was disagreeing with both of them on issues and realizing like, whoa, that there is a supercharged engine on the other side of this table and they're modeling the gentlest possible approach to somebody they know they can soundly run circles around. And it was like, not only was it really insightful because it challenged some things I thought, but it was also really helpful in modeling the kind of disagreement that we've always tried to model on this show. And they certainly did a great job of doing that. So those are standouts for me from an interview perspective.
Yeah.
I would say too, like having people on of that caliber. The other one for me is the Russ Moore interview that we did, where we were having all kinds of technical difficulties, and he was saying these profound things, mm-hmm. and I'm like starting to cry while I'm listening to his answers. I'm like, great, this is gonna go well. But when you have on people like that, you get to. I think we've gotten to demonstrate another thing that is important, and that's ask the dumb question. Like, ask the question that you're afraid. Like, I routinely feel like when we have guests on that I have to just show the fact that I don't know what this person knows. Like, they know way more about whatever their subject matter is that they're an expert in than I do. And we all need to have places where we can just go, I don't understand what you just said. Or can you circle back and say that another way? Or do you mean this and not that? And so with JT and Kyle, like, we do that some because each of us has things that we care more about or know more about. But with some of these guests that we've had on, it's just like, we're learning in real time. And those would be the three that come to mind. But then there are some other funny ones where we won't name who they were. But
I think we should name some.
I'm prepared, good guess.
It's just like where you're wanting to like ask a follow-up question and you can't quite get that worded edgewise. And there's for those of you who are looking for Easter eggs, there's one episode where JT chunks a pen audibly.
I think we need to go ahead and just name it. We've referenced it many, many times. We have great respect for this guy.
Oh my God, it was a technical issue. It was a technical issue. It wasn't that he was doing anything wrong.
We interviewed Tim Mackey.
Yeah.
From the Bible Project.
And again, we would say, I mean, Tim Mackey.
Oh my gosh, say, come back on, Tim.
Get five people in a room that you want to ask Bible questions to. Yes. Tim would be the first person I'd ask.
Yes.
Like
100%. So there is no shade.
Yeah.
We were at a time when before we did this, when we did, now when we interview people, we can actually see a video of them.
Yeah.
At this point, we were in literally a blacked out studio.
Yeah.
We had a window to our producer and engineer Brad, all the way back then. And they would call into a number that we would record on, which is fine for like a pretty, like, one-way style interview. It's not great for a dialogue.
Yeah.
So you would ask me a question. There's no non-verbal cues to read. And he, because he's a wealth of knowledge, and we invited him onto a show to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And when we got him on the show, we were like, Tim Mackey.
I still can't believe he said yes to
him. Unknowing faith. It was unbelievable.
And he called from his car. Do you remember he had to do the interview in his car for some reason? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
He was parked. And he has, like, he was parked.
He has like such a unique voice that it was easy to listen to him, but we could not get a word in because he couldn't see us and our mics would stay muted. He couldn't hear us. So like JT keeps trying to ask questions and engineer Brad is like flagging JT like he can't, it's not going to catch. You're not going to hear him.
But I didn't know that. So I didn't frustrated. See that.
JT gets so frustrated, he throws a pin against the wall in jest. He was not truly livid, but
I was not mad at Tim. I was mad at the situation.
Yeah.
It was like, yes. I want to ask him a question. And oh man. And I didn't think anybody hear the pin, but you can hear.
Oh, you can hear it.
Oh, you can hear it.
Well, you can't. I don't know if could they hear you going, trying to get your question.
No, I hope so. That would help me out.
A lot of that was muffled in post production. A lot of it was cleaned up. It's a lot of stuttering breaths there. JT, do you have any?
I would highlight all of those. All of those came to my mind. I'm going to highlight one that I've never told you guys before, and then I'm going to. That's kind of somber.
Oh, this feels safe.
Yeah. Well, no, it was actually. You guys remember? Gosh, it's almost 5 years now when my wife got sick. And you guys were real close friends to me in the middle of all of that and caring for me and my family. And I remember we had to take some breaks there, like when I couldn't make it in. And I remember the first time coming back into the podcast room with you guys at TBC. And of course, I wanted to be with my wife was healing. She was getting better. And it was like, okay, I can step back into my role at TBC and step back into this. And of course, my home is home with my family and with my kids. But when I got back into that room with you guys, it was like a place of safety and rest in a season of really deep turmoil, which was just a sweet like marker in my life that I've not shared a lot publicly of. I'm back with friends. It's going to be okay. God still loves me. He's still with me. So that was a really sweet thing. Now, onto the funny one. Jen and I were in Lubbock doing we were talking about brothers and sisters in ministry, and we had to fly, we were flying back to go to the Proclaim Truth Conference that, like a Saturday afternoon that Jen was teaching at. and that we were doing a live recording of Knowing Faith on. And we, Jen and I, just the day before, were talking about we can disagree with each other and brothers and sisters in ministry and theology is for everybody. And I'm like, great, we can live that at this all-women's Bible conference. And we begin talking about the relationship between Bible literacy and theological formation and doctrinal and creedal and creeds. And I disagree. So like, you know, we just talked about the fraternity world and the sorority world of evangelicalism. Well, we're in the sorority world of evangelicalism. I'm thinking we can model brotherly and sisterly disagreement. And I disagree with Jen in the sorority. And I find out you do not do that. I mean, there was like audible gasps. And my tires were slit in my car when I got back out to my car. You do not disagree with Jen Wilkin at a women's discipleship event.
Yeah, that was a moment I will not forget.
Well, what about, there were a couple of episodes where we fell out laughing and we could not pull it back together. And I'm trying to, I can't even remember now.
It was in one of the historical books when I said Shatim.
Oh, I remember that one.
But I definitely put the emphasis on the worst part of that word.
Yeah.
And there was almost no salvaging that episode.
You stopped halfway through the word.
Yeah.
I didn't even do it on purpose. I wasn't even setting up a bit. I started questioning myself in the middle of the worst word to question yourself in the middle of.
I was like, you just told the whole audience, you've literally never taught this passage before because anyone who's ever been in it knows. Always put the emphasis on syllable number two, no matter how it was pronounced originally. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Oh, man. Well, you know, I think that it's been really interesting. You don't need to give a long response to this, but I'd be curious. Did you ever think we'd start more podcasts?
No.
Okay. I did. I thought for sure we would.
Yeah,
I was almost.
You're a vampire. You never sleep. You're always thinking about the next thing.
I sleep 8 hours a night. I get great sleep. I sleep.
If
with
anybody's
the fear
unaware,
of the Lord,
Jen and I are the righteous on this thing, and Kyle's the gas. We're the governors, the moderators, and Kyle's the rocket fuel.
It's true, but you know it's interesting because along the way we've made friends with other cool people, right? Like, we've had collaborative partnerships and we've learned from other people. And so when I think about podcasts now being hosted by Adam Griffin and Cassie Bryant and Rebecca McLaughlin and Elizabeth Woodson, these are people we've worked with. They're people we've collaborated with. They're people we've punched up ideas for. They're people that we've read their work or we've engaged their work. And somehow along the way, we were able to make connections that have now moved from just like the connection acquaintance to the collaborative partnership. And that to me is so cool because I think it is a picture that this thing is not something that's proprietary and it can spread. Like, I think it's a picture of like, it's not just like lightning in a bottle with a couple of people. It's like, no. You can actually do this thing. And when you start to do it faithfully, other people want to engage with it and you get a chance to engage with other people that are like-minded. And I think that's been really cool.
Well, and I think the general flavor of all of the podcasts is you're allowed to engage in critical thinking about parenting or about apologetics or about cultural issues, or, you know, you're allowed to trot out an idea, look at it from different angles. Like, honestly, sometimes the guests we have on say things that I don't agree with.
Sure.
Some of the things that will be said on some of these other podcasts might not be things that I'd be like, yeah, I totally get behind that. Most of the things that they would say would be, you know, but like, I love that parenting podcast, for example, it's dialogue, you know, they're having a conversation with each other and they are, you know, in the parenting world in particular, for a lot of years, people in the church were told, think about parenting one way, you know, and that one way might mutate from generation to generation. But I love that what they're doing on that podcast is going, what if there were multiple ways we talked about this? And what if we brought in voices to help you think about it that way? And, you know, it's just something that in an age where if you don't say exactly what I believe, I cancel you is the attitude that people take. We're trying to reintroduce the idea of civil discourse around disputable matters and always pointing people toward essentials.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, I'm not even sure quite how to say this, but doing ministry in the West in Colorado is a little bit different than doing it in Dallas or I've done it in Louisville before. Like there's kind of an evangelical subculture in some parts of our country that hasn't quite made its way to other parts of the country, for good or bad, whatever. But like most people in Colorado just don't don't, or they're not aware of kind of some of the evangelical subculture stuff that we would be aware of in other regions of the country. So like most of my church, like when I came from the village, like who's the village? Who's Matt Chandler? Who's Jen? Mm-hmm. Like they just didn't, it just, they're wonderful conservative evangelicals.
But they knew me though, right?
They're like, oh, that Kyle Worley guy, didn't he write that book about like—
Pitfalls. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So like I don't lead, like most people in my church don't know that I do this podcast. Like I don't mm-hmm. get up on Sunday mornings and say, hi, you know, I'm the lead pastor. I've met you before. I'm lead pastor. By the way, I have a podcast called Knowing Faith. There's a few people in my church that know, but this has been wild to me over the last 6 months or so. I've had probably 15 unique conversations with people in my church that will say, hey, have you ever heard of this podcast called the Family Discipleship Podcast? Mm-hmm. It is so helpful. And I'm like, yes, I have heard of that, and I won't even tell them that I'm like involved with it, that it's part of a network of podcasts of an organization that the three of us co-founded. Like, and I love that. I love that these things are just making their way into evangelicalism, not because we're pitching them, but because they're genuinely helpful for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Well, that I love those stories. I've had at least two times when somebody has introduced Knowing Faith to me. Hey, maybe this would be a helpful resource for you. No, there's this podcast called Knowing Faith. And I'm like, I'm the host.
I'm Kyle Walla. I'm Capti Bapti. Yes,
I'm that
in
guy.
The flesh.
That's always fun. Hey, you know, I'll say this. I had it as a question, but to land the plane here on, I'm just going to say it as a statement. I've tweeted this out many times, but the Knowing Faith audience is just different from other audiences, and we're so grateful for that. We love the fact that this audience continues to ask great questions. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we said in the most recent Q&A episode, our questions have matured over years. The questions are getting better and better season after season after season, which is reflective of a lot of people taking seriously their meditation on God's word, the study of the deep things of God, the catechism of their homes and of their souls. And it's just really great to have an audience that's like that. They keep it civil. Like, I don't have to worry about our social media stuff being like a dumpster fire. And I'm never worried about that. And I really appreciate that. We take a lot of pride in the fact that we don't have an audience that seeks to like throttle one another in the comments on episodes and talking through things. And they understand that we're also just having fun, which, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay to do that. Right? Mm-hmm. Like at one point when Jesus is trying to prove something, he picks up a fish and pulls a coin out of its mouth. Like there were less fun ways for Jesus to make the point. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's okay for us to have a little fun. And we love that our audience is willing to jump in with that with us. So 10 seasons in, and I could not be more excited about this season. We are going to have so much fun. We have got surprises for both of you that you have no idea about, not even a clue. Things that
not a big fan of surprises, Kyle.
These are going to be the kind of surprises that you're going to be a real big fan of.
Other than the rapture.
That you're going
to... Just kidding.
Yeah, we actually, you know what? We should do all, you know what would not be divisive? Next season, a whole episode on the end times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's just do that.
That'd be great.
Let's lock that in right now. Listen, hey, thank you for listening today. If you want to find us, you can find Knowing Faith on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and drop a question in your review. We'll take it into consideration for a future Q&A episode. Listen, this is the 10th season for Knowing Faith. It's the second season for Confronting Christianity, the podcast I co-host with Rebecca McLaughlin, and we have some great guests and topics for this season. It is the fourth season of the Family Discipleship Podcast that we're so proud of with Adam Griffin, Chelsea Griffin, and Cassie Bryant. And this spring, we are launching our fourth show, which is Starting Place with Elizabeth Woodson, exploring what Christians believe and why it matters. It is going to be a great crash course introduction for those beginning their journey with Jesus or walking with others at the start of their journey with Jesus. You should check it out wherever you get your podcast, Starting Place with Elizabeth Woodson. In our next episode, we'll start in on the doctrine of salvation by chatting through the doctrine of election. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Grace and peace.